Coming up on this episode of Learn From People Who Lived It.
We're basically nose to nose, you know, he had a gun to his head. I called 911, you know, I had my phone behind my back. And as soon as he heard me call, you know, something luckily triggered in him. And, you know, he put the gun down and he got taken away to inpatient that night. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, we have two young boys. And so that night just kind of propelled us, I would say, in, you know, the worst night possible, propelled us into the best place possible.
That podcast is coming right up. First up, let me tell you about a couple of our resource partners.
At Metal Joe, they sell more than shirts. They sell apparel with a purpose. In fact, my favorite hoodie in my closet is a Mental Joe hoodie. They help out G.I. Joes to the average Joes one t-shirt at a time. With every purchase, you help them support organizations that can provide services to help others get out of their heads and into their bodies through plant medicines, equine therapy, yoga, and other non-traditional mental health treatments. Link to them. Pick out your favorite t-shirt or hoodie right now at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com/resources. One of our proud resource partners is Eric's House. Here's the deal. Nothing quite prepares us for the heartache of a profound loss, and grief isn't a problem to be fixed, but rather a normal reaction to loss. So when somebody you love dies, it might feel like everything you once knew is true has changed. When we experience that loss, especially the ones that are really unexpected, like suicide or addiction, grief is complicated. That's where the community at Eric's House comes in. Link to them on the resources page at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com.
Looking for no bullshit conversation about mental health? Find Learn From People Who Lived It wherever you get podcast. Search it using all one word. Learn From People Who Lived It.
Welcome to another episode of Learn From People Who Lived It.
Hello, I am Carrie McLean. I'm 44 years old, and today wanted to kind of share my story about resilience, love, and hope, and how my spouse's mental health journey propelled me into my own mental health journey.
Oh, you already answered one of my first questions that I was going to ask you,
which was,
she must have listened to this before.
I know. I was like, well, one of the first things I'm going to ask her is, now a little cliffhanger for the folks who are paying attention and tuned in now to Learn From People Who Lived It. Hi there. I'm Matthew. Right down there in the bottom is Dr. Frank Bavacco. How are you, sir?
I am great. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm having a really great day. It's been a good couple of days, some tough stuff in there, but mostly pretty, you know, good stuff. So I'm in a good headspace right now. Carrie and I know each other because of her husband. And I'm going to show everybody something here in just a sec that it just to kind of ring some bells. This may be familiar ground for some of you. So watch this quick clip. Then we're going to set up this whole journey that Carrie's on, which I think is going to be tremendous. All right. Here we go.
You know, like Dr. Dave said, just internally, I was a gross mess. You know, I held it together on all these other levels, but internally, I was just, I was a sick person.
What's so fascinating is the Chad that I know now, that I just had lunch with a couple of weeks ago with you, Carrie, is such a different dude than the one that he described in that episode. And almost a year ago was when he got on and shared that episode. And so one of the first questions that I was going to ask you was, did his journey have anything to do with your journey? So let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, his journey absolutely had to do with my journey. I mean, his, so just a little bit of backstory, you know, on my husband and, you know, our history. So about 3.5 years ago, he almost took his life. So it was a suicide, I would say, attempt. We were nose to nose. He had, just jumping into it super deep, huh?
Let's go.
We were basically nose to nose, you know, he had a gun to his head. I called 911, you know, I had my phone behind my back. And as soon as he heard me call, you know, something luckily triggered in him. And, you know, he put the gun down and, he got taken away to inpatient that night. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, we have two young boys. And so that night just kind of, propelled us, I would say, in, you know, the worst night possible, propelled us into the best place possible. So he was an inpatient and we were just trying to figure out other options. He was on SSRIs or traditional meds. You know, he was trying to do some of the self-help work, you know, that just like wasn't clicking. And through that journey, he found ketamine treatments, which is a form of psychedelics. And that, you know, pretty much, I'd say, saved his life. It completely like changed the way he thought about things. It made him clearer. And so, you know, as he was kind of going through his own journey and healing, you know, there was one day that he looked at me and he was like, well, what about you? And I was like, huh? What do you mean, what about me? Like, I've been holding down this household. I've been dealing with the kid, you know, handling our two young kids. I've been walking on eggshells. I've been taking care of you. Like, what do you mean, what about me? You know, and my husband's known to be pretty blunt. You know, he calls people out as is, which doesn't always, you know, resonate in the best ways to people. But it got me thinking, you know, of like, okay, what about me? You know, do I need to start taking care of me? Do I need to start looking into, you know, some of my triggers and traumas and issues, you know, and how that night, you know, basically impacted me.
Oh man, can we just hit the pause button? Because there's so much here. Yeah. I'm going to go back to that night that you said you guys are nose to nose. He's got a gun to his head. Like, the image that went into my head was almost kind of this violent scene. Was it violent or was it more like sad and tears? And
it was, I don't want to say full on violent, but it wasn't sad and tears. And honestly, I mean, I was the main instigator. He was sober. I was drinking that night. And it wasn't like this one thing that was like, you know, nothing had ever happened before, you know. Sure. Like, I mean, he had struggled with depression, you know. I've seen him, you know, where he's, you know, said he wants to take his life. I've looked in his eyes where I literally saw darkness. Like, I've never knew that was possible in looking at somebody's eyes before. So it wasn't like this was like nothing had ever happened before and everything was amazing. And, you know, we got into, you know, a fight one night and that happened, you know, like it had been a bunch of things kind of piling up to that night.
Always is.
Yeah. And then I would say that was, you know, and he didn't know, you know, in his mind, he didn't know any other way out. You know, he kept kind of messing things up, you know. But
self-sabotage, do they call that self-sabotage? Is that what that is? Yeah.
And I was upset with him that night, you know, for some of the self-sabotage, you know. I was pissed at, like, you know, this is you, you know? So I was angry at him that night for sure, you know, which plays into a lot of it.
Oh man. Okay. So Dr. Frank, I'm going to bring in, and then, like, before I even go any further, Carrie, I just have, like, I don't know that I'm going to be able to express how grateful I am to you for coming on, not just to share the journey that you're going to share with us today, but to talk about what it's like to be the wife in that role, in that case, right? Because it's so fucking hard. And you said something earlier where, you know, like, I'm the one holding it together. I'm the one dealing with the kids. I'm the one walking on eggshells. And so Dr. Frank Bavakwa, I bring you in as the mastermind here to give some context around what she just said, because it is super, super hard to deal with the person who's, you know, mentally ill at that point in time and dealing with anxiety, depression, suicidal ideations, an attempt at suicide, right? So walk us through what you're thinking about as you hear her story.
I'll be the first to admit it wasn't until she kind of said those words, you know, the kind of quoting herself back to what she said to her husband that night of like, I'm the one doing all this, this, and this. And it's like, you forget about that. You forget that, one, life doesn't stand still. Right. The kids still need to be fed and get off to school and all that stuff. Whenever we have something big in our life that we're dealing with, and I think we see this a lot with grief, right, on the other side of death, where how much time do I take for myself? How much do I take care of myself? How much am I still responsible for taking care of other people who are still mm-hmm. here? And when you're talking about somebody who is, you know, depressed, maybe feeling suicidal, like, there's almost like that pre-grief. You've lost them in some kind of way. And there's just a ton of layers. But yeah, I think especially, you know, really traditionally speaking, in the spousal role, the wife role, like, it is her job to keep everyone and everything together. And it's like, how well are you keeping yourself together at that point? And Carrie, you tell us, how well were you keeping yourself together at that point?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I thought I was, you know, I thought I was good. You know, at the end of the day, like, I mean, I was pinged out, you know, so after, you know, this is a kind of another part of it, but after the birth of our second son, so our kids are 15 months apart. So I got pregnant again when my first son was 6 months old, and, you know, in the midst of, you know, Chad's mental health stuff, he's in the middle of some jobs and just different things. And just trying to hold that together. And then, you know, so after the birth of our second son, I'd say I had postpartum depression that showed up more in the form of like irritability, which I hadn't had before. I was always super patient, super calm, and just a short fuse. And, you know, couldn't get any help for that. Like I tried to call doctors and they're like, no, you're good, just wait it out. I'm like, no.
That was really the advice, was just wait it out.
Yeah, I literally, well, it was also, yeah, I couldn't get any appointments with anybody. If I could, it was for like 4 or 6 weeks out. My main doctor was like, you know, no, like, I'm not going to put you on anything, you know, just, yeah, basically just wait it out. And I ended up taking a really small dose of Chad's antidepressants, because I couldn't get any help. And I'd say that helped me, but that's, you know, like a lot of SSRIs, it made me more just emotionless. So I didn't feel anything, but it made me feel better in the way that I could, I felt like I was handling my kids better and, you know, the day-to-day stuff. You know, so it got me through for, you know, for a reason at least, you know, or helped for a time being for, you know, the short term for what I needed. But yeah, I mean, basically I was a stuffer, you know, I stuffed everything, you know, kind of my whole life. I was you know, the strong one. When anything went down, crises, I just went into, you know, action mode and didn't worry about me.
I like that you said stuffer. I like that you said stuffer, because I think that's actually language we could change. Like being the strong one is being the stuffer. Being the strong one is like, I'm gonna pack it down because I've got other things that feel like they're more important right now to handle. I'm going to ask a really super heavy question that we're probably going to have to come back to, but it's just kind of going through me right now. When I went through my own mental health journey, Carrie, I believe that I gave my family kind of this permanent damage. I believe that there was a stretch there, probably towards the end, maybe in the middle. I don't know where it was for them. I can guess where it was for me, but I feel like I did damage that's irreplaceable. Like I'll never be able to overcome that. I'll never be able to make that up to them. I'll never be able to make that situation right. So two-parter, did you feel that way with how Chad dealt with his deal? Did there, was there like some irreparable damage there? And then how were you able to move past that?
Yeah. So this gets into another piece of it also. So yeah, I felt that for a long time. I mean, you know, I wanted to forgive him. I wanted to forget that night and, you know, other things. And, you know, we talked about it, you know, I knew that he was in a way better space, you know, and that it was, you know, safe again and that there wasn't anything, but my, you know, if you've ever read the book, The Body Keeps the Score, I feel like my body kept the score. And so even though I wanted to let go of things, there was still this distance between us. I wasn't able to like snuggle him and, you know, give him the attention and affection that he wanted or needed. Like it was just this block that was up within me still, even though I wanted to let it go.
Can I pause you really quick and ask Dr. Frank to just make a comment on that? Because that's a hard thing, right? Like in your head, you want to forgive because you know it's the right thing to do, but there is this wall that just will not let it happen. What do you think about when you hear that?
So I'm gonna preface this with, this may or may not be a fair comparison, but my wife has used this term, and not in the same context at all, but has used this term like, getting the ick, right? Like once you get the ick from a guy, like there's no coming back from it. Once you kind of see them in a certain way, you can never kind of see them in the way that maybe he wants you to see him again, right? And I wonder if that, like, maybe that's an unfair term to use in this moment, but it's like, Carrie, in that moment, like you saw him in a way, or something happened in such a way that like it can't be unseen. You can't see the person. There is no longer the person who has never held a gun to his head before. He is now a person who has held a gun to his head, and all of the things that means, you know, then, now, and forever. It was that part of it. Like, did the way you see him change, and it was hard to see the old him again, if we can call it that?
Yeah, I don't know. So he actually talks about this, and yeah, he can't talk about it without not crying now on some of the podcasts that he's done. But, you know, basically, like, he took away my safe space, you know, on it, you know, obviously not an intention, you know, and it, and so, and I don't even know if I can go into this on this podcast, but I'll I feel like this is an important part to share. So Chad and I have done an MDMA, which is a form of psychedelic that used to be used back in the 60s for couples therapy. And through that session, he was able, even though we had talked about all this stuff previously, he saw it in a different light. And I felt like I was heard and seen for the first time about what happened that night. So we were able to process it entirely differently. I feel like there's so much that goes into, you know, not just that night, but building up, you know, we've been together 10 years, you know, and it, like I said, this wasn't just a one night thing, you know, he's battled mental health, you know, since I've known him. And so it was, you know, kind of all the things that built up to that, you know, where, you know, when he was in a bad mood or if he had something going on, I couldn't lean into him. He needed me to lean into him and I leaned out. My body wouldn't let me lean in. I automatically put up those blockers. And so that created distance between us. And so, you know, and through that journey, if you will, like I realized that part, like when you need me to lean in, I'm leaning out because I'm like, where's this going to go? Can't be there. Your energy is way too heavy for me. You know, same thing, just those like body blockers that automatically trigger that you don't even know are happening. So, I mean, I'll stop there for a moment in case you guys have any questions, but I can go into, I can keep on spinning about this.
The thing that I want to kind of point out, because the podcast is named what it is for a reason, right? Let's learn from people who have been there before. And the thing that I heard in all of what you just shared, like the two words that come to mind are work and effort. There was a lot of work and a lot of intentional effort on your part, and it sounds like both of your parts, since that particular day, to come back from something that would be really hard for most people to kind of like come back from and get to a good place. And I think there are lots of people out there who think that good things should happen or bad things should be overcome without lots of work and effort, or they start dipping their toe in and very quickly turn away from it and can't walk into it and through it. I think you seem to be proof that like good things can happen on the other end of that work. But like, I think that's a take home message at this point, that like, if you want something really good at the end, like there is work and there is effort and it sucks while it's happening. But that's how you get there.
And it's an ongoing process. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No. Well, and I was just going to add to that. What I notice is you, and I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had to get way outside your comfort zone to find solutions that were going to fix this situation for you guys. When I listen to you talk about your use of psychedelics, I almost hear this anxiousness in your voice or in your breath, like, oh, I'm talking about something that, you know, people are going to judge me for. And I know that that's coming with it because you guys are so deep into your apparel line now. And that's a world that you almost live exclusively in now, where you're helping people out with these non-traditional therapies. But am I picking up on that? Wait, did you have to get way outside your box to try something like that?
Yeah. I mean, if you would have asked me 3 years ago if I'd use psychedelics, I'd be like, you're crazy. You know, I was a dare kid, you know, back then, like it wasn't like I dabbled or, you know, did anything. It was definitely like outside of my comfort zone. And I, you know, same thing at first was like, well, I don't have, you know, crazy PTSD. I don't have, you know, the big T's that you talk about, you know, like, you know, a lot of these psychedelics are being used for veterans and first responders and stuff. But it's like, you know, so in my mind, initially, I'm like, well, I don't have anything huge like that. But at the end of the day, trauma is trauma, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, when, you know, I decided that I was, you know, willing to kind of dabble in, you know, check out that space. Same thing, you know, it's not for everybody. There's education that comes with it, but it's been one of the most pivotal things in our lives and our relationship.
What is the thing that people are missing from making the leap? Like, as far as I can tell, like I've talked about this before, so I'll say it again. Like I've smoked weed most of my adult life, right? And you talk to people about the use of cannabis and they're always so weird about it, but then they fucking throw back 30 beers a week, or, you know, they go on benders on the weekend or whatever. And I always say to them, like, I think you're super confused on what it means to kind of elevate the mind a little bit and put it in a different headspace. Like, drunk is not high. Drunk is not high. And especially when it comes to certain plant medicines, like the stuff you're talking about in ketamine, which has been, you know, used for a long time. But can you verbalize that hurdle for people? And not that I want everybody to go out and get stoned tonight, but like there is a little hurdle there that you had to jump over.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely the hurdle. Like I said, you know, I was like, especially with the, you know, so going back, so my first experience with psychedelics was psilocybin, which is magic mushrooms. And I felt like, you know, I was pretty comfortable with that because it's like it's mushrooms. But the, you know, MDMA is a, you know, what you would consider a street drug. And that scared me, you know, based on same thing, history and things you read in the news, you know, and not knowing what you're getting and whatnot. You know, obviously we had a reputable source for that. But, you know, I think those are like the hurdles, you know, the stigmas, right? Like, and that's what, you know, one of our taglines is defy the stigma, you know, in mental health and in psychedelics, like the stigma associated with those. And, you know, people thinking that we're going out and doing this every day or every weekend, like these are used very intentionally at, you know, months, if not years apart from each other, you know, like it's not like we're using this as our only tool. There's a lot of things you have to do if you're using these tools, if you want to use them the right way. And I feel like every week I have these new light bulbs popping up from an experience I did, you know, 3 months ago that I don't know that my mind and brain would have been open to different levels of like consciousness, if you will, if I didn't, you know, kind of dabble in some of these modalities.
Yeah. So interesting. I don't know, Frank, if you've ever done anything like that. I'd be so curious what the experience would be like for a psychologist to go on shrooms or, you know, MDMA or psilocybin or something. You know, have you ever done anything like that?
I mean, I can confidently say that as I am sitting here right now, what you're describing in terms of like, you had to go really far outside of your comfort zone to reach some of these tools.
Yeah.
I would be that person that if I needed that tool, I would have to go really far outside of where my comfort zone currently lies because I believed a lot of what I was told growing up, you know, like South Park taught me everything I need to know, like, you know, like drugs are bad. Okay. Yeah. Like that's where I got all of my education from. So, as I sit here, like that is outside of
the comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. All right. Well, let's reel everybody back in. And I want to kind of progress now a little bit and really quick while we're talking about it, you can go to mentaljoe.com and you can check out the website and what they're doing over there, what Carrie's doing and what Chad's doing. It's really awesome, right? Like you have an opportunity to get some super cool apparel. mentaljoe.com. You can see it there behind her. They've got the coolest logo of that soldier meditating. I just love that. And when you buy apparel, you ensure that first responders and veterans can receive non-traditional therapies like psychedelics, like also yoga, like what is the thing that Chad does? The tension release exercise, TRE. Yeah. So it's not just about the drugs. There's a lot of other non-traditional modalities that you guys offer. Okay, back to you and your journey. So Chad inspired you to go deep and he looked at you one night and he said, what about you? Why don't you work on your shit? And I want to hear what you said next.
I mean, that night I'm sure I said, fuck you. Like, what do you mean? You know, like, and it wasn't like immediate, you know, it probably took me a few months to realize it. You know, we were separated, our intimacy, our connection, everything was not there. You know, like I said, we had two young kids, which I think plays into it. You know, I don't think enough people talk about the struggles in relationships when you have kids. You know, he always said, you know, I'm the fourth wheel out. I'm the fourth wheel or whatever, you know, it's you and the boys. Yeah. And then I'm on the sidelines just waiting to be tagged in, you know? And so he, you know, that played with his mental health, you know, as well, you know, where he's didn't feel like he was a part of things. And, you know, we just felt disconnected. And I mean, we'd have conversations about it. And I remember, you know, and I'm sure other moms and wives have said this, but I remember looking at him and going, you know, you're a grown up, figure it out. Like these, you know, our kids are kids. Like, yeah, I know you need things, but so do they. Like, they have my attention right now. Like, figure your shit out. Like, I this goes into another piece of it also. I didn't have the energy for him. All my energy went into kids and work and everything else. And, you know, I literally, like, in my soul, didn't feel like I had an ounce of energy or brain power or anything left to even give to him at the end of the day. So, you know, our kids are 5 and 6 now, still in the weeds of, you know, thick of things. But I feel like through our kind of journey and our communication and, you know, our healing and stuff, like, that's definitely has been brought together. But I think that's a big piece also I want people to know about is, you know, and this isn't for like the deadbeat dads or the dads that don't contribute at all, but the dads get the short end of the stick a lot. And I don't think, you know, with the moms and the mom brain and how pinged out we are and the being the primary parent and all these things. I mean, trust me, like, same thing. If you would have mentioned this to me 3 years ago, I'd be like, you're crazy. Yeah. It's all me. Like, he needs to figure himself out, you know, but now that I can like look back at the big picture and see, you know, how those dynamics change so quickly and, you know, the dads truly are missing their wives, you know, their husbands are missing their wives.
This is such a great conversation. I almost wish we had a big ass round table right now with like all these married couples who have kids who are all different ages, because mine are 15 and 17 now. And as I reflect back on the years that you're in right now, it just felt like a fucking tornado to me. Like, it was nonstop. Like, there was never any time for me or my wife for that matter, right? Because there was just constantly things that had to be done. People had needs. Because you're basically, Frank, and you're getting ready to have a baby, so you need to know this.
Yeah, like, this is not helping at all.
No, listen, so. We're just giving it to you straight, brother. You're basically on suicide prevention until they're 6. Like, they will do everything in their power to try to kill themselves in some way, shape, or form almost every moment of the day, and you have to make sure that doesn't happen, whether it's falling off a ledge, grabbing something they shouldn't, the old stereotype of sticking a finger in an electrical socket. Like, don't you agree, Carrie? They will find 100 different ways to injure themselves or take themselves out.
Yeah, 100%. Yes.
It's exhausting. So that's why I told you, man, sleep now, Frank.
Yep.
Freaking sleep now. So anyways, back to your story. You guys somehow get through those couple of years. And what do you owe that to?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, as the, you know, and I would say, like, I mean, we really started to be connected again, you know, in the last year or so, you know, like I said, after kind of our first kind of couples MDMA session, when, you know, we were at least, we could at least see each other, you know, for what it was. I saw where he was hurt, you know, he could see where I was hurt, you know, so it opened up things. I could see how I wasn't leaning in, you know, so there was definitely things that had like started opening up, you know, and then everybody talks about communication and how you have to communicate with each other. Well, we communicated, but we weren't speaking the same language still. You know, Chad can be very direct sometimes. And so when he would try to communicate with me, it would put me on the defense and I would shut down. I would back off and shut down. And he thought I was just being disrespectful. And, you know, and so we had to learn each other's communication patterns and I didn't even know what mine was. And, you know, same thing, like we're so pinged out constantly with kids. I didn't even have a second to stop at the end of the day and think about what was going on in my brain, what I needed, why I wasn't responding when he was asking a question, you know, or needed me to engage. Like there was, my nervous system was just pinged out. Like I couldn't even focus enough to figure out what was going on with myself.
Sure.
And then same thing, once I started to slow down and do some of my own healing, I could figure out my brain, you know, and when he talked to me to be like, okay, I'm not doing this intentionally. Like I need a minute to think about how to respond because I was not prepared for this conversation. And I don't just I don't respond just to respond. Like I was trying to figure out like where this even stemmed from, how to, you know, respond back, like what was going on. And so, I mean, I think communication is huge, but you can't just say communicate with each other because everybody's communication styles are so different. So like, how do you learn that, you know?
Can you add color to that, Frank? It's such a critical piece to the puzzle is you're both using words, but you're not hearing each other.
Yeah. I mean, and that happens a lot. I think that's why communication is such a focus of a lot of like couples work. Mm-hmm. You know, love languages plays into it. Just communication styles plays into it. What you necessarily say is not what somebody else hears, because it's colored by their own experiences and thoughts and feelings about things. And then there's plenty of times where we see like the positive effects of communication in a couple where, you know, somebody says something in a garbled way, right? Pregnancy brain, sometimes me, right? But like the other person totally knew what they meant, right? So communication is not about like eloquently speaking. It's about, can you convey what it is that you want to convey and have the other person pick up on that in the same way? But when you start having very vastly different experiences, everything that you hear and everything that you say gets colored by those, and you wind up drifting farther apart. You start falling into traps of like listening to respond as opposed to listening to understand, all the classic cliche stuff that we've heard. All those things are going to, you know, make you drift farther apart, not bring you closer together.
Can I ask you a question, Carrie? Mm-hmm. The first night that Chad says, "Hey, what about you? Why don't you go work on your shit?" Till the day that you started to quote work on your shit. You said that was a few months. Can you help us understand a little bit what you're starting to think about during those 3 months that eventually takes you to like, okay, maybe I got some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, I guess I would say I like slowly kind of tried. Right. So I was like, I tried to, you know, get a therapist through my work through, you know, one of the programs. I tried to go do yoga or like different breathwork sessions, you know, or like I was trying to figure some stuff out, but like nothing was really working and it was slow. And, you know, like light bulbs had come up, you know, like, okay, I need to go to the gym or I need to go for, you know, so like there was little things that I was kind of trying to do, but, you know, one, it wasn't quick enough for Chad, you know, in his timeline. You know, I think that's what happens with a lot of people, you know, when you talk to somebody about like fixing yourself or issues, like you want it to happen mm-hmm. overnight. You know, and it was frustrating for me because I'm like, I'm trying these things, but, you know, when, you know, I was basically on autopilot for, you know, 5 to 6 years, you know, between, well, maybe even longer than that, you know, before even, you know, even when I was pregnant, you know, and, you know, so it took me a long time just to like I said, I talk about my nervous system being pinged out and I didn't even know what it was until it wasn't. My body was just constantly tight. Like I just couldn't think clearly at all. Cause I was constantly like multitasking like crazy with all the things, you know, that moms do and people do. So like I said, it really wasn't until like my first, you know, psilocybin mushroom journey that I started to kind of see things. And for psilocybin for myself, when I did that journey, it wasn't, it didn't solve all the answers. Like psychedelics are not going to solve your problems. Like, let me just make that clear. Like they will show you things that you need to fix. Like they'll show you like things, you know, they'll make things clearer so that you can then pay attention to those and do the work. It's not like it's going to be a magic overnight thing. But so I would say like, you know, my psilocybin journey kind of showed me the light in a couple different things, of where I wanted to improve or, you know, being able to slow down and, like I said, you know, recognize some of the differences between Chad and I and, you know, be able to really feel what he was feeling without, you know, making it all about me and how burnt out I was.
Can I ask, what were those things? What were those things that you saw on that first psilocybin trip that you were like, all right, I need to work on X, Y, and Z? I mean, do you have some traumatic past? Is there some big, I mean, other than the event you had with Chad, which was super heavy?
I wouldn't say I have any like big traumatic events. So like, I mean, as a kid, I was not happy. I mean, I grew up in it would picture perfect on paper home. You know, my parents just celebrated their 54th wedding anniversary, you know, like very stable.
Like
home.
Franks.
Yeah. You know, very stable considering, you know, I had some like, I'd say childhood issues that, you know, whether it stemmed from them or whether it stemmed internally from me, you know, as a kid, things I kind of carried for a while. I had some horrible relationships between Chad that were, you know, fairly, I don't want to say like abusive, but definitely verbally abusive emotionally. some, you know, people that were definitely alcoholics. But I thought I had dealt with all that before Chad, and thought I was picking a good picker, you know, this next run around. I did some work, you know, before that. So there was definitely like things in the past. But the thing that came up, the biggest thing that came up in the experience for psilocybin was setting boundaries, for my family. Like, you know, our roles are untraditional. You know, Chad stays home, if you will. I mean, he works on, so he does Mental Joe, our nonprofit, and then he helps with the boys. I have a pretty stressful day job. So he's there making sure the kids get off to school, picked up, you know, go to boxing, do all the other things. And so that was, it's still hard for my family to accept as far as like what we've decided for a family. And I had a hard time backing our family in that. So that experience kind of showed me I need to set boundaries. Like, you don't have to agree with it, but you have to be respectful of our family. And so I was able to set that boundary after that journey.
What do you want to say, Dr. Frank, about boundaries? I love this conversation. Anything we can add is worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, I love boundaries. They're my favorite.
You got fierce boundaries. I love your boundaries too. I admire Frank's boundaries, and I'm not even making a joke right now. I truly do. This man has got great boundaries.
And with it, often, and Carrie, you talked about like the family thing. Like, with it comes the understanding that sometimes the people on the other side of whatever boundary you set are going to think and feel a certain kind of way about whatever the thing is. And I'll use a fun example. So, my wife and I got married earlier this year. Carrie, you're actually looking at the guy who married us yeah.
Efficient.
Yeah, I know. the most important guy. Second most important.
Yeah.
When we were starting to, but we were engaged for almost a year, but very quickly we started making decisions, trying to like plan things, trying to get ahead. And we had heard all the horror stories about like families having opinions about who's invited and where it's going to be and what it's going to look like and all of that stuff. And so like intellectually, we knew that we were going to come up to some kind of, I don't know, battle.
Resistance. Not necessarily.
Yeah. That's probably a good word.
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I like held her hand and I was like, repeat after me. I was like, it is our wedding. She's like, it's our wedding. And I was like, and we can do whatever the fuck we want. and nothing that we did had any sort of like ill intention toward anyone else. But there were some people who probably had some thoughts and feelings about things that we did or did not do or did or did not invite and all that stuff. But like, ultimately what it came down to was like protecting this new thing that we were creating together. And that, I think that's the misconception about boundaries, right? People make it about them. Boundaries are shutting me out. And it's like, no, boundaries are protecting me. Like, that's why you build moats around castles, right? Like, you are protecting what is on the inside of that castle. Like, it exists for a reason. And you have the drawbridge when you want to let people in every once in a while. But like, for the most part, that boundary is there for a reason. It's about protecting what's here. We're not trying to piss somebody else off, although we know that might happen sometimes.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to go a step further really quick. Hang on 1 second, Carrie. So let's say like her family has violated her boundaries, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's the thing. If you're going to set a boundary, you should pretty much expect that somebody's going to try to cross the boundary at some point.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost a guarantee that they're going to do that. So yeah. What kind of advice can you pass on that's like, okay, listen, when the boundary is violated, mm-hmm. I want you to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that there's a blanket answer, but obviously like—
Come up with one.
resort to violence.
Okay,
time.
There it is.
Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, I guess my best blanket answer is either you try to get somebody on board with what the boundary is, or a new boundary needs to be set. And I don't mean you compromise the first thing you were talking about. I mean, like, what we've heard a lot lately, because we have a kid on the way, we've heard a lot lately from other friends and like babysitting adventures with like family members watching our friends' kids and things like that. And, you know, having rules for the kids of we want them in bed by blah, 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 or we don't want them to do X, Y, or Z. And then grandma or grandpa comes along and they let them do the thing. And so then you have to decide, like, how important is that thing? Can we get grandma or grandpa on board? And if not, well, maybe they're not the ones to babysit for a little while until, like, if it's important enough, like, that's the new boundary that needs to be set. So, yeah, it's about setting, I guess, an additional boundary, not about compromising the one that you had initially.
Fantastic. I love that. All right, Carrie, back to you. You look like you're chomping at the bit.
So the boundary thing for me, so I was a peacekeeper in our family, though, you know, sure. So even like, you know, and same, Chad and I would talk about setting boundaries and you're like, why don't you do this? Why aren't you protecting your family? And like, well, that's just the way they are. And, you know, I don't want to rock the boat and things have always been this way. And, you know, and so setting that boundary, like, even though, like, in the back of my head, I knew I kind of needed to do it before, like, physically couldn't do it. Like, it was like, I don't know. The words would never come out of my mouth if I wanted them to come out before. So not just the same thing, not to say that like other people can't get there with like setting boundaries, but you know, I think people talk about setting boundaries and how easy it is, you know, oh, you just need to set this boundary, but it can be really hard if you're like a peacekeeper or, you know, certain family dynamics, you know, like what's that going to do to my family? You know, like I don't want to lose my family. So if I set this boundary, like, you know, what happens at that point, you know, and how much boundary, like, can I, you know, give up, you know, to still kind of set the boundary, but to still keep the peace? And, you know, there's so much more in my mind, you know, that goes along with like setting a boundary as well.
Add to that, Frank.
I was like, no part of anything that, like, this entire podcast and like the entire series, not just this episode, like, should just come with like the most giant disclaimer of like, nothing that we talk about as a like potential tool or solution is easy, right? Like, none of those things ever. But yeah, like setting boundaries in particular, like while we're talking about that, like it's hard because you're going to piss someone off. Unfortunately, there's no such thing as not setting a boundary, right? So think about that for a second. If you are setting the boundary between, let's say, you know, you as a couple and in-laws, right? Like that's where that line is drawn. If you're allowing those in-laws to affect or impact your marriage, well, that boundary still exists, but now that boundary exists somewhere on the outside, right? Like all of a sudden we're letting those in-laws into that inner circle. So the boundary exists because maybe we don't let strangers tell us what to do, but we're allowing these other people in, right? So we've still drawn a boundary. We've just drawn it somewhere else. Everywhere along that, like, you're going to piss someone off. And really the question has to come to like, what do you want to protect the most? For some people that, like, for a lot of people, that balance between not pissing off family of origin, the parents that I grew up with, the siblings that I grew up with, and new family, new marriage, like, that is probably the most common, very large, like, boundary battle, because where are you going to draw that line and who are you going to protect the most? Because if you protect family of origin too much, you wind up potentially not protecting spouse enough.
Mm-hmm. And we really owe it to our own kids, these kids that you're raising, Carrie, with Chad, the kid that this little girl that you're going to raise, Frank, and the boys that I have, like, we owe it to these guys to just do it so differently. And for those of those families that struggle with boundaries, it's like, you owe it to your kids to be the one that breaks that shit down and stop it. And just don't make it hard for them, and stop crossing the space where you know you don't belong and they don't want you. And, like, you know, figure yourself out, parents, and stop bleeding into they're all their shit. Like, I'm telling you right now, like, I could go on a soapbox for an hour and a half about the amount of stress and tension involved in the two holidays coming up, Thanksgiving and Christmas, for families. Mm-hmm. It is a nightmare. Mom's over here, yo, you gotta spend it with me. And the mom is over here going, you gotta spend it with us. And then dad's over here, whoa, what, you don't love your family? It's a freaking nightmare. And so, If you have kids, this is my plea to you. I'm praying into the microphone and the camera right now. Stop it. Just stop. Just stop crossing the boundary and just leave it up to them. And if you've done enough, they'll want to be with you. Sorry.
And if you're a grandparent listening to this, make it easy on everybody else.
Like, make it easy.
Your traditions can change. There's a bigger family to look out for. Everybody wants to be together and be happy. Like, don't make it so hard.
Yeah. It just does not need to be that way for so many folks. And anyways, okay. Back to you, back to your story. So you have this first experience with psilocybin. It turns on all these light bulbs for you. Like, let's kind of fast forward, because we'll start to sort of wind down a little bit. But you guys end up in couples counseling. You guys end up working through your things. He's working through his things. Let's kind of leave on something you mentioned up front, which is that word hope. Where are you guys now? Where are you as a couple right now? And don't give me the pretend version. Give me the real one.
I'd say we're amazing. So
yeah.
And it's ebbs and flows, right? Life is ebbs and flows. Relationships are so ebbs and flows. So like, I've been super stressed out the last like week and a half with work, you know, just compounded stuff, but I'm able to communicate that. Hey, I love you. This is not against you. Like, I miss you, but I got all kinds of shit going on. We are more connected now than I would say probably when we were married. Things are not the same as they were then. They never will be. And I don't want them to be the same anymore. Things are different. Things are better. We did it one additional MDMA couples ceremony that was just he and I. We didn't have a practitioner with us. And that night I looked at him probably for the first time in 6 years, and the words just came out of my mouth. Didn't know they were going to come out. And I just said, I see you. I see you. Like, I saw the man that he wanted me to see, the man that he is, in front of my eyes. I was able to let go down any additional walls. I was able to like literally melt back into him again. I feel like it was like, it's like when we first started dating again, like we want to touch each other. We like walk past each other and we make sure we give kisses and hugs and all the, you know, grabby things and stuff. Our communication is awesome. I'm able to lean into him now. He's able to lean into me, you know, and like, it's just as horrible as, you know, a few years were, it's been the best thing that I could have ever possibly imagined. And I don't think our lives would be as good or as fulfilled if that didn't happen.
It's pretty hopeful, huh, Frank?
Yeah. And I think the point that, again, I want to drive home to the people who are listening, like, this bad thing or a series of bad things that happened may have been a catalyst or presented an opportunity for you. But like, I don't want people to get lost in point A and point B and miss all the stuff in between, right? Like, you guys are not amazing now because something bad happened. You guys are amazing now because something bad happened and you did a whole lot of shit to like work toward it and fix it to get to now. There was an opportunity that presented itself. There was a thing that happened, but like, you're not just great now because a bad thing happened. You are great now because of the choices that you have made since the bad thing happened.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you three questions to wrap up. You mentioned up front, I want to talk about resilience, love, and hope. So what have you learned about all three? Let's start with resilience. What have you learned about resilience through this?
You can bounce back, but you don't have to be the strong one. Strong is not healthy. Strong is not like everybody's like, oh, I'm the strong. I'm so strong. I can hold all this stuff. Like, I was that way. It's a lot of weight to hold on somebody's shoulders. You don't have to be strong. You know, asking for help is strong. So resilience, like you can bounce back from things. Because something happened doesn't mean it's the end of the story or the end of the journey. And I think those just, it just flows into the other two. But
what have you learned about love?
Like I said, it goes in ebbs and flows sometimes. You might not like somebody one day, but I always love Chad. And love is work. Love is putting in the work every single day.
That's so fair. That's such a great statement to make too. And Frank, I know you're at the beginning of the journey with marriage and family, but Like it does. And it's also worth saying, and I feel like this is what our grandparents would say to us. You know, you mentioned your parents together 50 years and Frank's parents have been together for a really long time too. It's like you go back and talk to older folks and they'll be like, yeah, you know, I hated your grandfather for 3 years. And it's like, what? You hated grandpa? Yeah. But they'll say things like that and they're not off base. There is just sometimes a season that really sucks and you don't have to like them during it, but you know, loving them means, all right, I'm going to hang in here and see how this thing wraps up. It's like baseball. It's so terribly slow, but sometimes exciting things happen in the ninth inning. Sometimes exciting things. And you guys have kind of, you've rounded the bases that way. And as Frank said, you have done the work. Don't ignore that part of it. So then the final component is hope.
I mean, there's hope out there. You know, there's all kinds of new treatments out there. There's all kinds of new non-traditional type things, you know, that you can do together. And that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, we stress, you know, I have people, you know, reaching out, you know, mostly wives or spouses that, you know, are frustrated and not sure where to go with things. And, you know, there's hope out there. If you want things to work and you're both willing to put in the work, it's got to be a two-way street. I'm not going to say it's just one person and you both have to want to put in the work, but there's hope and there's healing. So there's what options out there.
Yeah, I love that. And I always say when I go out and speak, guys, I declare there's never been a better time to heal. Like there really hasn't. There's so many different options. There's therapy where you can talk about it. There's therapy where you can cry about it. There's therapy where you don't have to say a word about it. You can just put on headphones and lie in a bed. You know what I mean? There's psychedelics. There's plant medicines. There's SSRIs. There's so much to choose from. You're bound to, as long as you don't stop moving towards something, you're bound to find the thing that's going to ultimately help you out. As Carrie has, or things. Yeah.
It's typically not just one, right? Like it's, you know, several things. It's a tool in your toolbox and what tools do you need and what's working for you.
Yeah. What do you think about as you see this website scrolling to our side here? And by the way, this is the Mental Joe site that I'm encouraging everybody to go to right now. I freaking love the logo. The bull is one of my favorites. The design is so, so cool. But what do you think about as you look at this? Ultimately, what I think Chad hopes at least is his legacy.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a labor of love. You know, it's definitely been hard to pivot on, but the people that we connect with and the healing that we see in the community that we are building, you know, I mean, this is my passion and we're changing families' lives. You know, like I said, it's not just the one person that's struggling with mental health, you know, it's the spouse and it's the whole family healing. You know, how does the family heal? Long-term plan is we'd love to build some family healing camps, you know, so once people are on that other side of the mountain, you know, how do you rebuild the families and that resilience? So, you know, it's a labor of love, but it's our passion project and we're excited for what's to come out of it.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be really cool. Any parting thoughts from you, Frank, as we wind things down with Carrie?
No, I think she's been a perfect guest because, learn from people who lived it. But like the bigger mission, I think, for us is normalize a lot of the stuff, right? Like a lot of this stuff happens to a lot of us and we often don't talk about it. And we don't know what to do about it when it does happen. So I think she's been a perfect guest kind of moving us toward both of those things.
Man, I'm going to tell you right now, Carrie's only said that maybe 3 or 4 times. So congratulations to you. It's awesome. It's awesome. And I always wonder how people feel after sharing on our podcast. So like, what are you thinking and feeling right now as we just cycled through your basically your life?
Yeah, story? You know, it was a lot. This is my first podcast I've ever done. So I was a little nervous coming in, you know, wasn't really sure like where it was going to go. But, you know, you guys led the conversation awesome. And, you know, I feel like we covered a lot of different bases. So hopefully, you know, somebody will hear this and it'll, you know, spark a little curiosity or interest and help somebody, you know, just to know, you know, especially families with young kids, you know, like, there's mental health on one side of it, but family with young kids is just a whole other battle within itself. So,
Amen to that. And something Frank said just a second ago is sadly true. Millions of couples will be faced with a moment where they are nose to nose and somebody is talking about ending it all. And just sadly, that's our reality. Suicide is picking up at such an alarming rate. We've been touched by it down here in our Ahwatukee community as a young girl made that choice for herself just a couple of weeks ago. And it's like, man, when it gets that close to home, it just, for some reason, it makes it feel so real. And I know you know all too well, Carrie, what that's all about. And so maybe we end with you and your parting thoughts and what you might say to somebody who's with, because I think this is the opportunity we have. They're with a man right now, or they're with a woman right now that is thinking about taking their life. What kind of hope could you offer them?
First, I would say, you know, there is hope and there are options, you know, even if you think you've tried them all. But I know there was times that I was tired, that I, like, same thing, right? I didn't have the energy to give to Chad when he needed it most. But if somebody is struggling, get them some help. If you don't have the emotional capacity to help yourself, reach out there, you know, reach out to us, you know, like, we will kind of walk you through steps. We'll connect you with different organizations. You know, I mean, I think back to that night and how differently that could have ended in a split second. And, you know, so there's options out there. I know it's hard on the spouses and the families. And you want to just be like, why can't you just get out of your own way? You know, like, it's literally their brain cannot fight any longer either. So, you know, reach out. There's lines out there. There's more and more help. There's more and more different organizations. There's options. Don't give up. If you have guns in the house, take them out of the house. If somebody has a gun to their head, I went to a shooting class last week. It was like a beginner shooting class. I'm not comfortable with guns at all. And it actually triggered me. It freaked me out how easy it is and how light you have to pull a trigger. Make the guns hard to make accessible. Lock them up, put them away if that's even an option in your house.
Good advice. Thank you, Carrie, so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Dr. Frank Bavacqua, hope you have a great rest of your week, buddy. Thank you guys so much. This is the final podcast of the year.
Oh, going out with a bang.
We're going out with a bang. Absolutely. Actually, we didn't go out with a bang, and that's why we're all here still talking about it. Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. So y'all have a great holiday season, and we will see everybody who's been enjoying Learn From People Who Lived It for the last couple of years for our first episode the first week of January. You guys have a great holiday.
Thank you.
You too.
We have three goals with Learn From People Who Lived It. One, to help you feel less alone. Two, encourage you to seek out a coach, a therapist, a church, anyone who can help you get through your journey and find some healing. Three, when you're ready, share your story with us.
Find Learn From People Who Lived It wherever you get podcast. Search it using all one word, Learn From People Who Lived It.
At Metal Joe, they sell more than shirts. They sell apparel with a purpose. In fact, my favorite hoodie in my closet is a Mental Joe hoodie. They help out G.I. Joes to the average Joes one t-shirt at a time. With every purchase, you help them support organizations that can provide services to help others get out of their heads and into their bodies through plant medicines, equine therapy, yoga, and other non-traditional mental health treatments. Link to them. Pick out your favorite t-shirt or hoodie right now at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com/resources.